You sing for my beloved. My love song is concerning his vineyard. My beloved had a vineyard on a very fertile hill. He dug it and cleared it of stones and planted it with choice vines. He built a watchtower in the midst of it and hewed out a vine, wine fat in it. He expected it to yield grapes, but it yielded wild grapes. And now, inhabitants of Jerusalem and people of Judah, judge between me and my vineyard. What more was there to do for my vineyard that I have not done in it? When I expected it to yield grapes, it yielded. Why did it yield wild grapes? And now I will tell you what I will do to my vineyard. I will remove its hedge, and it shall be devoured. I will break down its wall, and it shall be trampled down. I will make it a waste. It shall not be pruned or hoed, and it shall be overgrown with briars and thorns. I will also command the clouds that they rain no rain upon it. For the vineyard of the Lord of hosts is the house of Israel, and the people of Judah are his pleasant planting. He expected justice, but saw bloodshed, righteousness, but heard a cry. Chapter 11. A shoot shall come out from the stump of Jesse, and a branch shall grow out of its roots. The Spirit of the Lord shall rest upon him, the Spirit of wisdom and understanding, the Spirit of counsel and might, the Spirit of knowledge and the fear of the Lord. His delight shall be in the fear of the Lord. He shall not judge by what his eyes see, or decide by what his ears hear, but with righteousness he shall judge the poor, and decide with equity for the meek. For the meek of the earth he shall strike the earth with his rod out of his mouth, and with the breath of his lips he shall kill the wicked. Righteousness shall be the belt around his waist, and faithfulness the belt around his loins. The word of the Lord.
According to Mark, the 12th chapter. Then he began to speak to them in parables. A man planted a vineyard and put a fence around it, dug a pit for the winepress, and built a watchtower. Then he leased it to his tenants and went to another country. When the season came, he sent a slave to the tenants to collect from them his share of the produce of the vineyard. But they seized him and beat him and sent him away empty-handed. The Gospel of the Lord. Please be seated. God has a green thumb. I'm sure about it. On the other hand, I do not. Not at all. I bet some of you here have a knack for growing things, gardens, plants. Am I right? Show of hands. Yeah, some of you are really good at this. I admire that. My issue is that I tend to overwater and then underwater. I forget to prune, and when a plant grows so big, it's supposed to be transplanted into a larger pot. Nope, I forget that too. Once I was given a plant as a gift. It was a strange-looking thing, purple and fuzzy on the edges, and this friend gave it to me and said that he had chosen this plant specifically for me because the nursery had advertised it as a plant that no one could possibly kill. The plant lived for 2 years, and then it died. So it's pretty good. It's my all-time high. No, I'm not a good gardener, but God sure is. Of course, you remember the story of the Garden of Eden. And then there's this image from the gospel, or from the prophet Isaiah, where God is a thoughtful and caring gardener. God made a garden and tilled it and fertilized it, planted just the right vines, and expected grapes to grow. But instead, it yielded wild grapes. And what started as a love song of this gardener for his vineyard turned into God singing through the tears about a vineyard gone wrong. In this story, we are the choice vines that have been nurtured and loved, pruned and cared for. Like an attentive parent, God provided just the right amount of rain and sunshine and freedom so that we could grow and blossom and bear fruit. But like an unruly weed, God's people do not produce the desired fruit. Sweet grapes to grace the table, or to be made into sweet wine. With all that care and planning and attention that God had provided, what more could God do? How could God renew this vineyard and renew the people of Judah so that they could produce good fruit? This past August, I took a trip to the North Shore and saw along the shores of Lake Superior the beauty of the creation. There were tall, proud, and fragrant white pines. It's one of my favorite trees that stand alongside that lake. And the landscape is peppered with wildflowers of every possible hue. As I hiked, I was marveling at the beauty of all of these flowers that grew in the most unlikely of places. Sometimes there were tiny cracks in the rock where a little delicate flower was growing sideways, reaching for the sun and for the sky. It was there that I realized that God can create life in the most unlikely of places and the most difficult of circumstances. Here's another example. There's a tree in Scotland called a Fortingall yew, which is 5,000 years old, and it grows outside of a church. This is an unusual tree, not because it's so old, because this type of tree tends to live a very long time. What's unusual is that as long as people have kept records about this tree, they have known this tree to be male. It has produced pollen, not berries. Then, just for its 5,000 year birthday, this tree decided to start producing berries. Pollen and berries. This tree now appears to be both male and female. In its old age, this tree is showing signs of new life and fertility. Scientists theorize that environmental stress caused a hormonal change in the tree. I didn't even know trees had hormones. But just when this tree should be starting to decline, being prepared to die, this tree has experienced a surge of new life, bearing pollen and fruit. The natural world provides us with countless examples of this type of thing, that despite all odds, life prevails. Hope prevails. A lot has happened in the world in the last couple of weeks. Terror has descended upon France, Syria. Brussels is on high alert as we speak. Syrian refugees still seek safety. And at times it feels like darkness is just descending upon this earth, as if the rotten fruit has taken over the vineyard. In Minneapolis, a young African-American man named Jamar Clark was shot by police last Sunday, and he died this week. While protesters seek the truth and the details of Clark's death, Twin Cities citizens and supporters of Black Lives Matter have been camping outside the 4th Precinct in Minneapolis. There have been tense encounters between the police and the protesters. This week there were rocks and bricks thrown at police cars, and the police also threw pepper spray at the crowd. It was a mess. While anger and frustration, sadness and suspicion has grown around this situation, something else is happening, something miraculous. Out of this terrifying situation, a community is coming together. One of my colleagues, Pastor Javen Swanson, was down at the 4th Precinct, and he shared this. He said, "What an amazing community has gathered here. I sense from the people I talked to, they were just grateful to have their stories heard and to be really seen as human beings worthy of love and respect. People worth showing up for on a frigid morning. Say what you will about the protest. The community camped out at the 4th Precinct gives me hope." Another one of my colleagues, Pastor Brad Frosley, shared this. "Near the bonfires, food tents, and in the street, there is prayer dancing and singing. People of all ages, races, economic brackets, and life experiences coming together. In fact, he talked about a protester had fainted at one point, and the police, the protesters, and the firefighters together helped this person who had fallen. They were working together. Now, it's not over there. We still have a lot of work to do, but I see glimmers of hope. Life is a paradox, is it not? Just when it seems that all is lost, we see a glimmer of hope. When we really wonder if God has checked out, we see glimpses that God really has a hand in things. In an interview this week, a French father and his son, there was a video that went viral, you might have seen it. This father and son were discussing with a journalist why they were leaving flowers in the town square in Paris. Talking about the killings in France, the reporter asked the boy, "Do you know why people did this?" The young boy said, "Yeah, because they're very mean. We have to be careful. We might need to move to get away from the bad guys." The father replied, "No, it's okay. We don't need to move. France is our home." The little boy said, "But Daddy, there are bad guys here." The father responded, "Yes, but there are bad guys everywhere." The son said, "They have guns and they can shoot us because they're mean, Daddy." The father said, "It's okay. They have guns, but we have flowers." And the son said, "Flowers don't do anything. Flowers can't protect us." And the father said, "Of course they do. Look, everyone is putting down flowers. It's to fight against the guns." The son said, "The flowers are to protect?" The father said, "Yes." And the son said, "And what about the candles?" The father said, "The candles are to remember the people who have died." And the son finally got it. And he said, "Oh, the flowers and the candles are here to protect us." The flowers and candles protect us from despair, from turning against one another in violence, in hatred, and believing that darkness has won. Candles and flowers and prayers and coming together as a community to face this together, we guard ourselves and this world against fighting violence with violence, becoming hardened to the injustice around us, and being blind to the beauty and goodness and the hope that God is creating in our midst. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. God the gardener planted choice vines and expected grapes, but instead yielded wild grapes. What more could be done? God asks. Are we not in the same situation today? We ask, what more can be done? Sure, we can point fingers at each other, blaming politics, economics, or a misuse of power. Before we go there, I ask us to first look at ourselves and see what we are planting and cultivating in God's vineyard through our friendships, our family, our coworkers, our neighborhood, and our church. Are we asking God to be the gardener, to cultivate, prune, and care? Or are we trying to do it all on our own, with our own resources, with our own talents, with our own limited wisdom? Do we pray that God will cultivate something new in our world today? What would that be? What might God be pruning or cutting back or destroying so that new life can come forth? How might God grow a tiny crack and rock of this world and plant something unexpected and beautiful and hopeful? How might God be renewing your life when things sometimes seem very hard? These are difficult questions that are at the heart of our faith, questions that we cannot ignore. For the kingdom that Jesus envisions, there is no room for infighting or hatred or the blame game. In the kingdom, there is no room for white privilege. That's where I intend to examine myself and see what needs to be pruned away so that I can become a part of what God is planting that is new and beautiful and hopeful. In Isaiah chapter 11, it says that God will not judge the vineyard by what is seen or heard, but that God will judge with righteousness. One definition of righteousness is love in action. Love in action. God will judge with love, but God will indeed judge. The prophet Isaiah said that God will judge the poor and the meek with equity and with love. And the outcome is the kind of beloved community that Jesus spoke often of. God will gather the people together from the ends of the earth, from Egypt to Syria to Brussels, from Tanzania to Brazil to France, from city streets and mountaintops to quiet suburban streets. God will gather all the people together in peace, young and old, black and white, police and protesters. Yes, God will gather us all together. And the prophet Isaiah said that in this beloved community, jealousy and hostility shall be no more. In the kingdom, the wolf and the lamb shall lie down together. In God's kingdom, the Minneapolis Police 4th District will be surrounded by citizens and police and government officials, and they will no longer be in opposition, but will sit down together for a common purpose, to work for justice and truth. Yes, this kingdom is what the prophet Isaiah envisioned, and it's exactly what Jesus envisioned when he turned our world upside down. The thing is that Jesus provided us with a vision for how this world could be, but it's not going to happen all on its own. Part of our human struggle and our growth as a human family is to struggle for understanding together, not apart. We must learn together, not apart. We must heal this world together, not as lone rangers in a wildly disturbing and violent world. We are meant to do this together, regardless of our differences, despite our disagreements. In God's kingdom, violence in households and on city streets will be a thing of the past. Neighbors will join together with neighbors, and together we will make this world safer, a more secure world in which to raise our children, a world in which flowers and candles and prayers is the chosen antidote for violence and hatred. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. Amen.